Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog in the ant.
Life finds a way.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one, because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks. This is the show where two geeks geek out with beer. Tim is not here today. I'm Frank. And with me is my sister, Steph.
Hi.
Hey. This is fun. This is gonna be cool. So we've been wanting to get together and podcast together for a while. So we grew up together in the 90s.
Yes, we did.
And we did a lot of, we watched a lot of movies together, a lot of TV together, we shared a lot of obsessions as kids. Like Smallville was an obsession that we had when we were teenagers.
Oh, and yeah. That was a big one.
That was a big one for us.
And you're welcome, by the way.
Yeah, you actually.
I was the one who turned you on to Smallville. I want that to be out there.
I think for the record, actually, that should be said. Yeah, as much as I really ran with it and I was really into it for all the Superman reasons, you were into it from a little bit from a Superman perspective, but also from like the teen drama perspective. That was how you kind of got into it at first, I think, right?
Yeah.
And I was
young. I was maybe like 12 when I, something like that.
Yeah,
so I was
yeah.
into that kind of stuff.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. You were the right age for that aspect of it, and you helped me look past that and enjoy the Superman aspect of it. So, but yeah, but we've shared a lot of obsessions over the years, and we're going to talk about one of them today. But before we do, what are you drinking?
I am drinking a Napier Beer Black Christmas.
Black Christmas, yeah.
It's a wonderful dark ale.
It is. Belgian. I tried a little bit of it. It's really good. I am having a Red White Christmas from Mikkeller, which is a Danish brewery. And this is a combination of a Belgian wheat beer and a British red ale. And it's really, really good, actually. It's really good. So, yeah, I mean, it's, you know, Christmas is not far behind us, and we're still enjoying some winter beers. So.
Indeed.
All right. Well, cheers to that. Listen, let's talk about one of the movies, maybe the movie that, at a certain age, I feel like was the movie you watched more than anything else.
I feel like it's fair to say that most kids, especially little girls, are watching this movie all the time.
The Wizard of Oz is I think, still, at some point, it was the movie that has been seen by more people than any other movie. I'm not sure if that's still true.
To be
I imagine
honest, I don't know if it's still true, but yeah. It wouldn't surprise me.
It wouldn't surprise me at all.
It's a classic.
It is. I mean, it came out in 1939, right? Same year as Gone with the Wind. It is a rather old movie, but has this timelessness to it, this like storybook timelessness to it that everyone can get on board with and love. Do you remember seeing this movie for the first time?
I don't, only because it's one of those movies that I feel like I was born and the movie was just playing.
Yeah.
It was always there.
Yeah.
It was always there. I remember how we used to watch it, though. It used to be, we had probably recorded it off TV.
Yeah.
Because it was on like this VHS tape with the commercials.
Oh, yeah.
And that's how we used to watch it for a long time.
That's how we watched a lot of things. I mean, yeah. And I've made reference to that on this show before. Like just how many movies and shows. I mean, Tim and I have talked about lots of things where I remember, oh yeah, I recorded that off TV. Like Robin Hood is one that comes to mind.
Yes.
We recorded that off TV.
I still like to watch that one on the old tape.
On the old VHS
like,
tape.
Part of the experience of watching the movie for me is like watching the like commercials from like 1994.
The Lego commercials.
Whatever
with the,
was on there. Yeah.
Yeah. I remember some specific ones. But yeah, so this movie was no different. I feel the same way. I don't really remember the first time I saw it. It was just sort of ingrained, you know, in
always
our childhood.
There.
I do remember I remember the first time we watched, so we had that VHS copy that we watched and watched and watched.
Yep.
And then eventually we got a DVD copy of it that had all these bonus features and, we were able to kind of enjoy it on a new level. Right. And like watch all the bonus, like there was that Angela Lansbury
oh,
special
hours. is
hours and hours of bonus footage,
like actual hours.
We got like we really geeked out on this movie at a certain age because we like I don't think most people are that into it. I think a lot of kids watched it over and over again, but I don't think anyone is really into. Well, you know, Busby Berkeley and the.
Nobody cares about like the technical aspect.
Yeah,
like we're very movie people. You know, yes. Like, that's how we were as kids. We still are. Like we care not just about like the story that's going on, but like I know that when I watch something that I like to look it up. Like mm-hmm. I want to know about like the director. I want to know the director's wife. I want to know all this weird stuff.
Which, if you're looking for that with this movie, there is plenty of it.
Tons of that stuff
with
out there.
The Victor Fleming, like all his backstory, and he was working on With the Wind at the same time, and.
Yep.
All his shenanigans off camera.
Ingrid Bergman shenanigans.
Yes, right. so yeah, we are definitely sort of obsessive when it comes to that. And this movie, I think, is one of the first examples that I remember of getting that into something with this movie. And like,
yeah,
all the information that we downloaded in our brains about even like the story about what was his name? The original Tin Man. Buddy Ebsen,
yep.
Right, so
and his makeup mishaps.
Yeah, so they used when they first made the Tin Man makeup when they were doing. He was Buddy Ebsen was cast. He later went on to do the Beverly Hillbillies, but he was originally cast as the Tin Man, and they used an aluminum powder. Is that right?
I believe for the makeup? So. I know it had aluminum in it.
Yeah, and but the powder was he ended up inhaling it, and he was very allergic to it, and it made him horribly ill. To the point where he had to be hospitalized, he couldn't breathe. They had to recast Jack Haley in the role, and Buddy Ebsen like had breathing problems for the rest of his life because of that.
It screwed him up that
bad. And when they recast Jack Haley, they used an aluminum paste so it wouldn't be as inhalable.
There was another mishap on the set there too, that actually, when you watch the movie, you can actually see it in real time happening because that's the take that they used. So it's in Munchkinland.
Mm-hmm.
The Wicked Witch of the West is about, you know how she disappears in like her big cloud of smoke?
Oh yeah, I know what you're going to say.
Yes. Like how they did that, they had like a little elevator like underneath her feet.
Mm-hmm.
That's how she like, you know, quote unquote disappeared.
Yeah, there'd be like a pyrotechnic explosion.
Yes.
And then the cloud of smoke, the elevator would bring her down.
What happened on the take that we see the first time she does that, when she's exiting Munchkinland, she goes down with the elevator, but she actually caught fire.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's, again, with that aluminum paste or powder.
Oh, was it that again?
Because she had that, too, on her face. That's the green stuff.
Uh-huh.
And it was flammable.
Oh.
And her face caught fire.
See, I had read that.
And she got third-degree burns.
Yeah.
But they couldn't refilm it because that was, like,
it was
really
a
hard thing to do.
Yeah,
so they kept it. Like,
right.
We're watching her get, like, burned every time.
I mean, you can't tell,
morbid.
But yes, that's
no,
what's happening.
No, you can't tell, but it's horrible.
And I had read that part of it, though, was that the elevator didn't go down at the time it was supposed to, so that's why she was still above ground for the explosion.
I think there was a slightly off,
like a delay,
couple of seconds mm-hmm. in timing, and then like she was kind of like falling without the thing underneath her
You
know, it was pretty scary.
Yeah, that is scary. Yeah. So I mean, it was at the the early days of, well, not quite the early days of color movies anymore. Over 10 years into that, but it was an early high budget special effects film. Right. That was a lot of the effects that we see in this film. We wouldn't even think twice about today. But even just the idea of like the tornado and like the house flying.
Even
and stuff.
I was just going to say, like, even something that like looks kind of stupid to us, like, you know, they're just using a little model, like, of course. But
right.
Like people didn't really think to do that much.
This was the
then,
invention
you know?
Of a lot
like,
of these
that
techniques.
Was a huge deal.
Yeah.
And the funnel being.
Oh,
a silk
yes.
Stocking.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Right. The
like,
tornado.
Right.
Is actually a big silk stocking that was like twisted around and on that DVD in the bonus features they had a really really long shot, I mean like 10-minute long shot of the tornado contraption being turned on and slowly revving up and then moving in the background of this little model neighborhood that looked like
the
farm.
Yep.
and then revving down as it slowed down, and you can watch the whole thing, and it actually looks very real. Even today, it looks pretty real when you watch it in context of like it moving in the background. But
mm-hmm.
when you see it getting turned on and turned off, it's like, oh, it's just a toy.
It's
just a model.
Just a little toy.
It's like your little like.
And they reused like the shot. You know that there's that one shot right before she lands in Munchkinland.
Yes.
Where you see the house, you know, like coming toward the camera.
Towards the camera, yeah.
They used that same shot backwards and forwards.
Oh, in different.
Because when they wanted it to look like the house was flying up into the
reverse
tornado,
it
they would reverse it, and then they were, you know.
Yeah, they did a lot of things
like
that.
There was a guy up on like a big boom and throw the house
throwing
down
it, dropping like this toy house down at the camera. What? Do you have a favorite character in this movie?
That's very hard.
I know, right?
As a little girl, I loved, you remember, that like I loved Dorothy, obviously.
Of course,
I wanted to dress up like her.
You were her for Halloween a couple times,
I was her for Halloween, and it didn't even have to be Halloween because I would just dress up like her. I had a little basket. I had mom get me a little dog. I put him in, you know. Just
you had a little Toto.
Yeah.
Toto too?
But like actual favorite character, I don't know. I guess the Scarecrow.
Yeah. Scarecrow.
A little bit the lion, because he's just very funny.
I think Scarecrow is for me.
Yeah.
I don't know why. I kind of maybe because he's so.
You
like,
see him more than the other two.
That's true.
Honestly, because you get introduced to him first. Clearly, Dorothy has some kind of favoritism.
She even
straight up
said, "I'm gonna miss you most of all." I always felt
like,
as a kid.
Ouch.
As a kid watching that part, I was always like, "You can't say that out loud."
What are the other guys gonna think about?
Yeah,
this?
They're
like,
right.
Seriously,
they can hear you.
We all just went through like something pretty traumatic.
We just we killed
the
witch and
the
then
balls.
What? And now you're telling me what? I'm not even your like my top three. I mean, do you like the flying monkeys better than me? What's going on here?
Dorothy had very weird priorities.
She did. She did. Yeah, I can see that though. Dorothy and the Scarecrow. Yeah, you see him more than anybody else, and he's clearly Dorothy's favorite.
He has a lot of good one-liners. I feel like
he does, and he's such like a goofball, and he's such he's so dopey and funny. I think he's my favorite. I think Tin Man would be after that for me, though. The Lion is lower on my list. He's fun. He's funny.
I just
he's
like
a little
the Lion
too goofy.
Because he's so, like stupid.
Yeah,
like,
I mean, he's...
He's kind of relatable, because I'm afraid of everything, too.
Sure,
so it's like
he's kind of the perfect type of character for a kid's movie like that.
You know?
Because he is just sort of the comic relief. At every turn, he's constantly...
Put him up.
He's funny, and they're all funny at different points, and they all have one-liners, and they all have funny jokes and gags and things, but he's like for the kids, I feel like, more than the rest.
Yeah, I mean, the whole movie is for the kids, I guess. But.
Yeah, but I mean, more than anybody else, I feel like that's him. Favorite song? Or a few of your favorite songs?
You know, actually, besides Over the Rainbow, because I feel like that's like you have to say that. And
it
is true. I actually think it's a beautiful song.
Sure, yeah.
I actually love the song that they sing when they get to the Emerald City. The Merry Old Land of Oz.
Merry Old Land of Oz.
I love that song. I don't know what it is about that song. I just love it. Whenever I listen to the soundtrack, which I do kind of often because I love this movie, that's like the song I play the most. It's very,
good.
Very
really?
Upbeat, cute, catchy.
It is. Not what I'd expect.
Yeah, because it's not like a big deal of a song. I just always love that song.
It's not like not the most well-known song from the movie necessarily. You know
it's
what I mean?
Not
like,
at all, because it's very short. It's very like a passing thing. I think I love the lyrics of it too. It's just very cute. They describe like how like people work for an hour a day and like everyone's happy and like that's it. This is what it's like to live here.
It is.
It's
a
very cute.
Pretty utopian kind of
notion.
I like that song. I do think it's a little underrated, so I'm with you on that. It's an interesting choice. It's not what I was expecting you to say, actually. I really like If I Only Had a Brain, specifically the Scarecrow's, you know.
That's one. That is a
really
good.
Because obviously they all do their version of.
Question, though.
If I Only Had a Heart, If I Only Had the Noive. Yeah? Question?
The Noive. Question. So do you prefer the film version of that or the uncut version that had the whole dance number in it?
So yeah, there is a longer extended cut that was they reduced down for time, because if they had kept it, then the Scarecrow's part would have been like 10 minutes long and the other two guys would have had like 2 minute
again. Scarecrow favoritism.
I know. Well, they clearly had like grand plans for this movie
for Ray Bolger in
particular. Ray Bolger, yeah. No, I really like his version. I think I do like the extended cut, and I've heard it now and seen it. You can actually watch the full thing. It's on YouTube.
It's like one of those things that's like not such a secret anymore. It's like,
yeah,
it's like
no,
a popular,
it's been on DVD bonus features and things like that. So, yeah, I do like that uncut version quite a bit, actually. And I do sometimes, I don't remember the last time I actually watched the movie all the way through. It's been a while, but the last couple times that I have, I found myself hearing the like extended cut in my mind and like expecting to go off
continuing it yourself.
Yeah,
the song ended. I know. I've done that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think on the DVD that I have, you have like two ways to watch the movie. I think it's like with.
Oh really?
That, I think so. Unless I could be making
that's
that
cool.
up, but I feel like I've had that option
before. I always like when they give you that option and you can watch you know, you can watch with extended scenes or deleted scenes put back in. You have the option of like watch it with or the theatrical cut. Like I always mm-hmm. enjoy when they give you that option. But yeah, I like that cut quite a bit. But either way, I think it's such a fun song. And I like the jokes and gags and you know, with the thoughts you'd be thinking you could be another Lincoln. Like, I like the rhymes and the little puns and the little jokes in it, in the Scarecrow's song more, I think, than any other.
I also feel like the Scarecrow's version of that in particular has a lot of, like, references that adults would get.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
Not in a, like, a dirty way at all.
No,
I'm
no, no.
Just, like, you know, jokes that...
For the parents. Jokes yeah. for the parents to get. So this movie is, in general, is... This is what I always sort of refer to as, like, Muppet humor. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know exactly.
Because the Muppets are so... What makes the Muppets so timeless and so enjoyable for families and for people of all ages is that they're operating on multiple levels at once. And they always have. That's been, like, baked into the tradition of the Muppets since the start. And since Jim Henson, you know, started it. So you've got jokes that are meant for the kids, obviously, but then there's jokes that go over the kids' heads that are not inappropriate or not dirty or anything like that. They're just going over the kids' heads because they're meant for, like, an older generation, making references to celebrities the parents would know or whatever, something like that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't disrupt the kid from the kids, though.
Not at all. It doesn't make them feel left out, like, wait,
right.
What?
You just completely miss it, and you don't stop and think, like, wait, what was that joke? I didn't get it. You just don't even know there was a joke there.
And then it adds to your enjoyment, because over
yeah.
years and years, you're going to be, you know,
you can
old,
want, when
and
you
can
get
still
older,
watch the Muppets and not feel weird about
when
it.
When you get older, you'll appreciate it on the level you already liked it, and then on a new level as well. And that's what this movie does as well, because it has a lot of those jokes. So you're right, this song has that kind of humor built into it. It's and really, really throughout. Like I would say that the wizard character does a lot of that kind of stuff, and not just the wizard. Anybody played by Frank Morgan. Frank Morgan, yeah. Throughout the film, you know, the guy at the who rang that bell? Mm-hmm. Like that guy is kind
Even
of like
the,
that too.
The professor who's kind of like a scam artist.
Oh yes, exactly. Yeah.
He's
very
a scam
much so.
Artist who has a heart, though.
Yeah, yeah. He's a con artist with a heart.
Yes, he clearly, like, you know, runs this, like, you know, business. I'm gonna
yeah,
say,
he's a fake fortune teller.
He doesn't know what to do. But he's such a good guy, because when he pieces together that Dorothy is running away from home, he uses clues about her, like the picture she's carrying, like stuff that she's carrying with her in her basket, whatever, and, like, her suitcase. He uses that to, you know, make her realize you need to go home, little girl. Like,
mm-hmm,
you
mm-hmm.
have a family who loves you. They're probably worried about you. Just go home.
Just go home.
You know, it's sweet, actually.
It is, actually, yeah. As a kid, it's actually kind of scary, because he's saying all these horrible things that, oh, they're getting old, they're, you know, whatever. They need you, and everything's terrible, and if only someone would go back to them. And she's like, oh, no, I need to go back.
Your Aunt Em looks like she's sick, you know? Like,
yeah,
oh, no.
yeah, exactly. And it
freaks her out, because she's like a little kid, and she doesn't know that,
yeah.
that she thinks he's actually reading
yeah,
the future
right.
or, you know, whatever.
Right. So and if you're watching it as a kid, you're like, oh no.
You might not even pick up on that, honestly. I didn't pick up on that. I thought he really was like a, you know, like a psychic.
Me
or whatever.
Too. As a kid, I
when
did.
When you're older, you're like, look how nice that old man is being.
What
he's trying to be, you know, help
yeah,
her get home. And...
Yeah, yeah. he's just doing the right thing, basically.
Doing
he's
a public service.
And he doesn't charge her, right?
No, not at all.
Yeah. So. Yeah, that's true. That's a good thing to bring up. I think the Frank Morgan character. So that yeah, he's operating on multiple levels, like mm-hmm. like Muppet humor. All the Frank Morgan characters do, I guess. He if I just blew anybody's mind by pointing out that all three of those people were played by the same actor, then I don't really know what to.
Are there people who don't notice that?
I don't know. I wonder.
Even as a kid, when there are a lot of things I wasn't picking up on, I do think that I picked up on that.
I think I did. I definitely.
Maybe I didn't, but I feel like I always knew.
The one thing that I think everyone of all ages can pick up with this movie is that the people in the black and white parts also have roles.
The farmhands. Yes.
Well, just the farmhands. The Aunt Em and I almost said Uncle Owen.
wrong movie.
Uncle Henry. Yes. Uncle Henry.
Yep.
They don't have parts in the Munchkinland.
They don't.
The Oz parts. But yeah, but the farmhands and...
Miss Gulch.
Miss Gulch and the wizard guy there.
The fortune teller.
Wizard. What was his name?
Professor Marvel.
Marvel. So they all do. And obviously it's the same actors playing, you know, Miss Gulch, obviously the witch, and all this stuff.
And they have... And this is something that I kind of just realized now that I'm talking. Like, so... They all have parallels, obviously.
Yes, yes, you know, right. Well, like Miss Gulch being like the villain
right.
in her real life is the villain in her fantasy life as well.
I didn't just notice that part.
Well, yeah,
because like, the farmhands is pretty obvious, like the brain, courage, and the heart and whatever, and then her being like kind of a bitch, and then you know whatever. So that is pretty obvious, but I didn't really
kind of
realize,
a witch. You mean
kind of a witch? What I didn't really realize is that Professor Marvel is a con artist, and so is a wizard. Like,
oh, sure.
Part,
yeah,
I
yeah, yeah.
I don't know why it took me till now to realize that.
But he also gets to, the actor, Frank Morgan, gets to be not just the wizard, but also the guy at the door who lets them into Emerald City. And also the
cabbie.
Does he have any other parts? It's just
I
those, right?
I don't think so. I think it's those four.
And it kind of makes me wonder, like, is it supposed to be? Like, is it supposed to be the wizard is doing all these roles?
I don't think so either. I think that Frank Morgan at his time was, like, a very popular, like, old actor.
Yeah.
He was known for that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And they wanted this, like, that was his, like, fame. Like,
right.
He's all over this movie.
He was good at doing characters and things like that.
He was.
A radio actor. He was, I think, a vaudeville actor, too.
Apparently, he's so good that some people don't realize that all of those roles are him. So.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But see, he's super fun. He's super fun. Yep. I think he gets to have a lot of fun in this movie. Burt Lahr gets to have a lot of fun in this movie as the lion.
Yes. He had to wear, that suit was 90 pounds.
90 pounds, yeah.
And it was very hard for him to get in and out
of. Of course.
So when they would like break for lunch or like bathroom breaks or whatever, like he also, I don't think he could sit in it either.
He couldn't
sit.
So
they used to prop him up on like this kind of board thing. You know that exercise machine that they have like sometimes on like QVC? It turns you upside down.
Yeah, yeah.
I feel like that's what I imagine that they put him on. Because the way that I've heard this thing
described,
it kind of like had a little bit of a tilt going. And he would just kind of like lay kind of on it because he couldn't sit or anything.
Wasn't that for
eat either.
For Jack Haley too? Because he couldn't really sit in that.
That's possible. I know about the lion, but it's possible that it extended to him too.
Yeah,
and I think like the prosthetics he had like around his face, like the weird like nose and like little cat mouth and everything.
Yeah.
I think that made it hard for him to eat, and I think I read somewhere that like he could only have like broth or something.
Oh yeah, whatever he could eat out of a straw, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. They went through some hardship.
It was tough.
I will say,
Judy Garland had to be like taped down.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the character's supposed to be, like, a younger girl, and
right.
she was, you know, developing,
right.
and they used to have to, like, tape
she
her
was
down
like
and be...
She was, like, 17, 19, something like
she
that?
She wasn't 19. No, I think she was maybe, like, between 15 and 16, something like that.
And they wanted Shirley Temple for that role originally.
They did.
Which
it would have made more sense if you think about it.
Would have been fitting, yeah.
Because Shirley Temple was more of the age that Dorothy's supposed to be.
Yeah, and she
In
was
fact,
a
she
child
might have
actress
been a little older.
Who was... Who, by this time she probably was, but you know, she was well known as a child actress and like it sort of was a fit, but she wasn't available for some reason, right?
I don't know if she wasn't available or what happened. It might have been that Louis B. Mayer was like, no, we have to use this new up and coming girl who I think is going to be like a big deal. Like, I really don't know.
Yeah.
Not that this was Judy Garland's first movie. Definitely was not, but.
But it was her breakout role.
I don't even know if we would consider it her breakout role because she actually was like known already. Like she was in some stuff that was kind of,
but this made her a household name. I mean, you have to admit.
Yes. No. I'll.
This was her first really big. This made her a star.
Yeah.
She had been in some MGM movies already. She had.
I'm not sure if she'd been in any of the Andy Hardy stuff already at that point with Mickey Rooney.
No. Not
at all.
I don't think
so. I know there
so.
Were a few of them.
I don't think she had done any Mickey Rooney stuff yet because I think she and Mickey Rooney got together shortly after this.
I don't know. Maybe. Timeline's like messed up.
I don't think it was until the early 40s.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so.
The early 40s, she was already moving on to, like, you know, solo stuff, though, like, you know.
Well, but that's when those movies started. That's when the Mickey Rooney's, I don't know. I mean,
I guess so. I feel like
I'm not
going to see you in the 30s, though.
I'm not going to use my one look up on this, but I'm pretty sure, at least in my mental timeline.
Just because I've seen a few of them, and I know that some, she looks even younger than she looked in The Wizard of Oz, so, like.
With Mickey Rooney, though?
Yeah.
I've seen stuff of her younger, but I don't know.
Yeah. Think about it, though, Frank, because Girl Crazy?
Yes.
With Mickey Rooney?
Yes.
Was in 44 or 45?
Yeah.
And they had already, like, done all of their like backyard musical type things.
That was already gone. It was done.
Yeah.
Like,
even though that movie kind of is one, but it was like they had stopped and they came back together to like do that one.
Summer Stock, was that one of theirs?
He wasn't in that.
He's not.
No.
Okay.
Summer Stock was in the '50s.
Okay. Okay.
And it was Gene Kelly.
Oh, yeah. Was that the one with "Come On, Get Happy"?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that's a totally different one. Sorry, I got my names mixed up on that one. But yeah, I don't know. I'm pretty, I feel pretty confident about it. Well, we can, if we're not going to look it up, we can just move on. I'm not going
to
use my,
on to the next.
Use my look up for that one. I was going to say Ray Bolger's, you were talking about the prosthetics, that Burt Lahr had to wear. Ray Bolger's prosthetics are really good. Like really good in this movie. Like you can barely, like it really looks like a burlap sack that became a face. It
really does.
You know?
I also think that it's cool that like, you know, you know those weird movements that he does to look like he's doesn't have
tall
bones
and lanky,
or
yeah,
anything.
Yeah.
You know, he could do that himself.
That was his style. That was like his dancing style.
He was good at becoming like a rag doll.
Yes.
Like, I think that was what he did on the vaudeville circuit. Like,
yeah,
that was his thing.
It was. I mean, you can see there's actually plenty. I mean, he had done other MGM films before.
He had
this.
A very interesting way of like moving his
yes.
body.
Yes.
It was like rubber.
Yes, yes. Yeah, rubbery is a good way of putting
and
it.
And it worked perfectly.
And so when he's supposed to be made of straw, you know, it fits.
Yeah, he has no bones. He just falls apart.
Right, right, exactly. He's so floppy.
I
and
believe
just sort of...
that he was there originally to audition for the Tin Man. And he was
yes.
like, I want to be the scarecrow.
Yes.
Because he was thinking, like, I can do all these things, like, make him look like he's heavy, like, you know, you know, hay and all this stuff. Like, I really want to do it.
Didn't he?
And
like,
I think he did it for them. And they're like, oh, yeah, you should be this.
Didn't
scarecrow.
He go into either Louis B. Mayer's office or Victor Fleming's office or something like that? And like begged for the job, like begged, like I know you want me for Tin Man, but I really want this. And did his wife go with him and everything?
Maybe
like, I feel like
I
that's a story that he told in the DVD bonus features where they have all those interviews with the cast, like for like the 50th anniversary or something.
Mm-hmm.
They're all like very old. I want to say that's
that could have happened.
That's
I
what
don't
happened.
Really remember that part, but
and it's also interesting that because of the whole stuff with Buddy Ebsen losing the part. Which apparently he was heartbroken about, that he wasn't able to play the part because he really wanted
super
it.
Super psyched to do it.
But Jack Haley was, this was back in the old studio system. This is the early days of, this was Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer made this movie, but then there was Fox, there were the Warner Brothers.
RKO.
RKO was still a big deal, yeah. And the way it worked was almost like sports teams where the actors were signed to a contract with a studio to do X number of films with that studio. And then when they had done fulfilled the contract, they either were re-signed or let go or whatever. And so you were under contract to a studio.
It was like a factory type.
It was. It was. And so like you belonged to the studio and made films for the studio. Which when you think about that and you think about old films like a Casablanca or something like that, classic movies, just consider that all these actors were like basically owned. They were like, think of the studio as like a sports team, and they're the players for that team.
Mm-hmm.
They
would sell certain actors out
right.
in weird deals for things.
Exactly like the way teams trade players.
Exactly.
Or we'll you know, like, okay, we'll give you this player and $50,000 or whatever. Like they do that in baseball, for example. And they were doing that back then. So Jack Haley was under contract to Fox.
Mm-hmm.
Fox or RKO? I think Fox.
I believe it was Fox.
Yeah. And so to have him come over and do an MGM movie was like a big deal in the business. Like, okay, we're going to make a deal where he's going to be on loan to MGM. But I think he was finishing up another movie for Fox at the same time or something like that. And so there was some crossover. But anyway, it's an interesting little tidbit of movie trivia.
They did something similar. I'm not going to go into the specifics because I'm not even sure if I'm correct about this, but I know that there's something to do with when they were doing Gone with the Wind. Clark Gable, I think, was on loan from...
Now, Gone with the Wind, is that MGM?
Selznick.
Selznick, but, well, so was that... Selznick
which,
was his own studio?
Which was...
Though? No, but now that's owned by MGM, right?
Yes.
I'm trying to remember.
David O. Selznick.
He was the producer.
I believe that he was Louis B. Mayer's son-in-law.
Oh, really?
I think.
Oh, okay.
I keep saying I think because I don't want to give people the wrong information.
Well, you know, that's worth a look up. But okay, so finish that story, yeah.
Yeah, so I think that he was... Selznick started at MGM, and
yep.
then he wanted to do Gone with the Wind as kind of like an offshoot, I think, and they did some kind of trade so that he could get Clark Gable.
Got it.
Yeah.
So Gable was not MGM at the time. Was he with another studio, as far as you remember?
Gable, I think, started at RKO. And then I think he was traded to MGM. And then...
Okay.
He was a big deal, so I think he got moved around a lot.
I mean, he was
making bargains to have Clark Gable, you know, like...
He was definitely, like, the biggest movie star in the world at that point, I think. So, yeah, okay, so here we go. It was...
So big that even Hitler loved him.
Yes, that's true. That is true. I've heard that. Production, yeah, it was produced by Selznick International Pictures and Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer.
Yep.
So you're absolutely right about that. So
was he his son-in-law?
That is the next part I'm going to look up here. But interesting. I guess I didn't realize what a big presence Selznick was in the industry at the time. I don't know. He was dating. He married, yeah, Louis B. Mayer's daughter. So he was the son-in-law. You're right.
Nice.
Nailed
I'm
it.
Impressed with myself.
Nailed it. Good job. So we've just got a few minutes left here. So maybe we can sort of do a lightning round of some things you want to, any final things you want to mention, songs, scenes, characters. We didn't talk about the Munchkins very much. Is there anything in particular you want to mention before we get out of here?
Well, other than that, they were billed not individually, but rather as the Midget Singers.
The Midget Singers, not offensive in any way, shape, or form.
That could not happen.
Like
now.
The entire, all like 100 or 200,
something like that. There's
several hundred or dozens, if not hundreds, of individual little people were just billed as the Midget Singers.
The Midget Singers.
That's it.
That's what they were billed as.
Some of them were kids. Some of them were adults.
Apparently, a lot of them were drunks.
Yes, that is something that Judy Garland.
And kind of pervs.
Judy Garland. Kind of made up her own lore about...
She was a very funny person.
She was hilarious. But for decades after the movie came out, you know, she'd be on talk shows. She'd be on Johnny Carson or whatever.
Jack Parr.
She would make up stories that were patently untrue about things, about, like, Munchkin actors trying to pick her up or whatever.
Up skirt shots or whatever. Like,
and some of them were true, but many of them were just false.
Yeah. I do like to believe that a lot of them were drunk.
But they're all amusing. Maybe, all the stories are amusing. True or not. any other mentions or
we
or...
could talk about some differences between the books and the movie.
Yeah, so
which I didn't read the book, so I can't say everything, but I know like a really big one is that the slippers were made ruby, you know, just for the technicolor aspect of the movie.
They were silver, yeah.
In the book.
And Judy Garland's actual ruby slippers are in the Smithsonian.
Is there?
You can go see them in Washington, D.C.
And
I haven't actually
seen. She had tiny little feet.
No, she was like 16 years old, so.
And she was really short.
And she was tiny.
She had maybe like a size 5 foot, and I'm like, what is this thing?
Wow. Yeah, but they sold at auction for some ridiculously high price, and they now belong to the Smithsonian. Pretty cool. I think this is definitely one of the most iconic films in American history. It's, like we said, like every kid has seen it. They say more people have seen it than any other movie. It's a classic. It's still played on TV like all the time. No. Apparently, it wasn't really a huge hit until, like, it was successful, but it became a bigger institution in the 50s when TV came around and kids could watch it on TV all the time.
Right, because it ushered it in for a new generation of kids.
Yeah. And ever since then, it's been just a staple.
You know
of
who
American
we didn't
TV.
Talk about very much is Margaret Hamilton.
Oh, sure.
Who played the Wicked Witch of the West.
Right, she got her face burned off and we barely talked about
her. She got her face burned off and that's the only thing we talked about. She's awesome in this. And
she
also,
is.
She was such a good sport too because, you know, she plays a mean person, obviously. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But she was so sweet in real life.
Yeah.
She loved children. She was a teacher, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Loved kids. She loved that she could be in this movie because she grew up with the book.
Mm.
And she was just so thrilled that... So when she heard, like, they want you to be in The Wizard of Oz, she was like, oh, what role do they want me to play? They're like, the witch! And she was like,
oh,
I'll still do it.
Yeah.
I love it. Like, I don't even care. And then she had so much fun, and she never got sick of it.
Mm.
You know, they had her until, like, the end of her life. I think she died in the 70s, something like that. They had her playing, like, in like, repeat performances of certain things. Like,
she'd
go on, like, Christmas specials that, like, someone would have and be like, the Wicked Witch of the West. Like, she loved that role.
I didn't realize
that.
She
loved that kids, I mean, she didn't like the kids were afraid of her, but, like, she loved that she was part of something that she loved as a kid that other kids like now, you know?
Yeah.
And she was a really good sport about it. She's a very sweet lady. She's funny, too.
She was very funny.
Anything that you've seen her, you know, any, like, interviews, stuff like that. She loved talking about the movie. She was like the opposite of Harrison Ford talking about Star Wars.
So true.
Who never wants to talk about Star Wars. She was always like so happy to talk about it. She
who
loved
cares?
It. She was very appreciative that like
she was.
This gave her a whole new life.
Yeah.
A new legacy. You know?
She was like that person who's just like, I'm just happy to be here. I'm just happy people like what I did.
I'm happy
and
to be a part of this like iconic movie.
Yeah. I'm happy to be part of this bigger thing and like glad that my name will be remembered for this.
Exactly.
This thing that I care about, and now people remember me for it. It is really cool. And she was very, very sweet, like older lady in her later years, and
very unlike
very,
the character she played.
Yes, and talked very fondly about mm-hmm. the whole production.
Yep.
And she did a phenomenal job in the
Not
movie.
Not bad for someone who got their face burned off.
Yeah, really. And when you think about it, she is the like that image of the Wicked Witch of the West is what we think about at Halloween every year when it you know, with like witches. You know,
totally.
Like all the iconography is always that with like the green face and the black hat and you know black robes on riding on a broom, literally comes straight out of that.
And it's funny too because there's another tidbit about the casting for the witch. They wanted a different actress originally. They had her do screen tests and makeup and costume tests, and her name was Gail Sondergaard.
Oh yes, I know this name.
She was this very very beautiful actress, and they wanted her to play the witch. And the reason that she didn't get the role was because even with the ugly witch makeup, she looked too nice.
Mm-hmm.
She was very pretty and very naturally pretty.
Mm-hmm.
And she just, like, her pretty eyes and everything, like,
she
just,
looked
like, shone through the makeup.
Yeah.
And they're like, we can't make her, like, evil and ugly.
We can't
just,
ugly her enough.
We cannot uglify this woman enough. Which, I like, being Margaret Hamilton, I'd be like, you only hired me because I am
uglier
than excuse me?
And she joked about that, too. I
she
feel like
did, though.
I feel like that was a thing that she made. She had like, she had these stories that she would, when she would be interviewed, she'd like bring these, you know, like as people do when they're asked the same questions over and over again. And she kind of had this almost like a comedy routine of like all her stories about the making of the film. And that was one of them is sort of like, oh, so I got hired because I was ugly or great. Like,
yeah,
awesome.
Exactly.
Anyway, very funny. Well, I highly recommend, if you haven't watched this movie in a while, you know, we've all seen it. If you haven't seen it in some time, rewatch it, you know, rewatch it with your kids or your family or you know, just a loved one or even just on your own, and really, really appreciate it for what it is and for, like, the treasure that it is. And think about just how, like, think about 1939. Like, we're talking just, you know, before World War II and all this kind of stuff. Like, think about how long ago that was and how good the movie looks. And it's actually been very well preserved over the years. If you buy the newest, you know, digital or Blu-ray copies of it, and it looks pristine. They have preserved this movie so well. It looks amazing. I just saw it on TV last night, actually. And I was just amazed at how good it looks in HD. So check it out and enjoy it. Until that time, be sure to check us out on the internet at beerwithgeeks.com. You can follow us on Twitter at beerwithgeeks. You can email us at beerwithgeeks@gmail.com. Find us on anywhere podcasts are found, including Overcast, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play Music, anywhere you want to find us, we'll be there. On iTunes, Apple Podcasts, you can leave us a review or a rating. Please make it good. Tell us what you like about the show. Tell us what movies you'd like us to cover, you know, sort of this old movie club thing we've been doing as of late. Let us know what movies you'd like to hear us talk about there. You can also find us at thoughtbubbleaudio.com, where you'll find not just this show, but also Supergirl TV Talk and Hate Watch with us and Academy Rewind and a whole bunch of other shows. Some new shows coming pretty soon. Check us out there. And of course, if you enjoy the show and you want to support us, tell a friend about us or head on over to patreon.com/thoughtbubbleaudio, where you can, for as little as a buck a month, you can support us and get early access to episodes and some special Patreon exclusive episodes. We just recently put out a Patreon exclusive for Academy Rewind. They talked about 1978's Oscars, and of course among that was Star Wars, and in the main Academy Rewind episode you'll find the whole discussion of Star Wars itself, but in the Patreon exclusive there is a whole discussion of whole episode just about Star Wars and talking about the legacy of Star Wars and all of that, and really, really fun, interesting discussion between Tim and Palmer. So I encourage you to check that out at patreon.com/thoughtbubbleaudio. But it has been a pleasure talking The Wizard of Oz with you, Steph.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Steph.
Thanks for coming on the show. It's a lot of fun. We'll have you back sometime.
I hope so, because there's nothing I love more than sharing my snobbery about the old studio system. It's very rare that I get to dispense these knowledge bombs.
I know. It's so rare you get to have an outlet for this stuff. So Anyway, it was a lot of fun talking, and I hope you guys had fun listening. And until next time, cheers!